south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Today, once again, we'll give you the dope on the good, the bad, and the ugly. Yep, you'll hear it all today. First, we'll do the good, even the great, and later in the show, we'll get to the ugly. You'll want to hear the ugly, too, because it could happen to you. First, we'll start with an email from Paul, a previous expat insider seminar attendee, who decided after the seminar he was going to live in Guatemala. By the way, if you hear some construction noises today, that's because there's construction. Anyway, he says, Johnny, been meaning to reach out to you. A year and a half into my new life in Guatemala and things are fantastic. I've been taking Spanish lessons online for about 6 months and I can function pretty well now, if only at, well, a very basic level still. Business is going great, too, despite having started in a pandemic with no clients. I'm starting to see what you mean when you say that for most gringos, money isn't really a problem once you get down here. It's just you have to make that paradigm shift to stop worrying about it. It'll come, it'll come. Besides all that, I wanted to tell you a little story. I was out in that little town of Frijanes, Guatemala, with Lawyer Jose and Captain Mango today. Ended up running into a guy they knew who owns a coffee plantation down the road and got invited to an impromptu party at their farm. They fed us, gave us cake and coffee plus plenty of beer, and treated me like a welcome guest despite having never met me before. I feel like I won the lottery, Johnny. Can't thank you enough. Couple of questions, though. I don't think I've ever heard you mention where you buy meat down here. How do you know the meat you buy isn't full of hormones and pesticides? I buy almost all my produce at the big terminal market, but don't buy any meat there. I'm not ready to make that leap yet. But at the supermarket, there's no way to know what's in the meat. What do you do about that? And then he says, I thought I'd ask you again about something I heard you mention on a recent show. I've still never been able to get around the aduana fees for Amazon orders, despite having never placed an order over $200. I've tried the Miami Box Courier service you recommend, and they took almost a month to get my stuff here, and they wanted to charge me almost 90% of the total cost of the order. I protested, and they brought the fee down to 50%. It's not a huge deal for me, though, since the cost is so dramatically offset by the reduced cost of living down here. But what's the deal on shipping and couriers? Anyway, Johnny, hope your seminars get rolling soon. Thanks again, Paul. He's got a PS here. He says, have you thought about using PGP encryption for the Gmail address? You could just publish your public key so that anyone who emails you there would have the option. Just a thought. All right, Paul, let me answer that question first. I also have two private emails. One's a Proton Mail account and one's a Start Mail account. That's for my personal and sensitive stuff. And like everyone with a brain, I hate Gmail too, but I use it for general correspondence. Problem is, most of us got a Gmail account a long time ago. And unfortunately, so many millions of us are stuck with Gmail because we got online with it, what's it now, 12 or 15 years ago when it first started, before there was any talk at all about privacy laws and selling your data. And as the years roll on, and you've got 10 or 20,000 emails logged, there's just no way to easily switch over to another service. So, though Gmail does keep and store everything you've ever done, as well as your GPS positions too, you have to keep reminding yourself of that. And anything that has to do with IDs, passports, contracts, passwords, crypto addresses, scans of legal documents and bills and contracts, not to mention drunk scenes and sleazy photos, you should never put any of that stuff on Gmail or WhatsApp for that matter. That doesn't mean you have to ditch those services. It just means you should get an additional encrypted email service for your personal stuff, like Proton Mail or Start Mail. And though both of them have a very basic version that's free, you'll find out it's quite limited. So my advice, fork out the $40 to $60 a year it takes to have absolutely snoop-proof emails and correspondence. Oh, and of course, you really should get a VPN, too, to hide your IP address. That way, when you do searches and stuff, you won't get plastered with ads and pop-up windows. And no one will be able to absolutely pinpoint your actual physical location and your search patterns. Oh, and by the way, if you use the Proton VPN, it's a paid service. I think it's something like $30 or $35 a year. They automatically give you a complete Proton Mail account, the kind you'd have to pay for. Well, they just give it to you for free if you buy the VPN. A pretty good deal. That said, though, there is a huge advantage to Start Mail because the paid version allows you to have unlimited aliases that you can keep forever, or you could keep for just a minute or a day or a week. It's just so handy. For example, suppose you're searching the net, you come across a free report, something you're really interested in reading. Well, you know how that goes, right? You got to put your email address in, and then they'll send the report to your email address, or you'll have to click on the link in that email address. You'll get the report all right, and then they'll sell or pass your data around. You'll start getting all kinds of ads and pop-up windows at that address. And like me, it'll probably bother the hell out of you, and you'll have to unsubscribe, but that's not enough. You'll keep getting more and more stuff as they keep selling off your data, and you end up on more and more mailing lists. But you see, if you have StartMail, what you do is you create an alias address, give it to the site that requests it to get your downloaded report, go back to your email, download that report, and then disable or delete the alias, and you've got that report now, but you'll never get pestered with ads, promotions, or pop-up windows again. Why? Because that particular email address no longer exists. It's gone. I must have used that trick 100 times already. Oh, and another advantage to creating alias email is, for example, you could create one just for your family. So all your correspondence to a particular email address, you know, is coming from your family. And you can have one just for, let's say, Social Security, if you're getting Social Security and you correspond with those guys or the embassies. I know some gringos who use alias emails for their girlfriends. They create a different email for each girl. I know it sounds twisted, but some guys have more than one girlfriend, and they make up an email alias for each one. And why would they do that? Well, I don't even want to go into those details right now. But you can use your imagination. All right, let's talk about buying meat here in Latin America. Now, the first thing you notice when you're driving out in the county and you see some cows wandering around is that they're just out there grazing. Since there's 3 or even 4 growing seasons here in Latin America, even during the dry season or so-called summer season, when there's not much rain, things still grow. In all my years down here, I've never yet seen a feedlot. The cows just head out to the fields in the morning and keep grazing all day. In silos, they're almost non-existent, so they're not storing corn or grain to fatten up the cows when they're stuck in the barn. Thing is, you almost never see barns. Cows are kept outside. At most, they've got a little lean-to so they can get some shade, but most often they're just out there grazing and living their lives in the wild. Though their areas are fenced in and enclosed, they've generally got huge spaces to roam. And because they're free-range grazing, that means they're almost never eating stuff that's been planted specifically for that purpose, like corn and barley and stuff, that you and I know are just laden with pesticides. When you look at the land these cows are grazing on, no farmer's been in there planting. All the plants and greens they're eating are growing there naturally. On that same note, here's a little beef eater story for you. There is a little country one-lane road on the way to the last house I lived in where I'd see cows grazing all the time. In fact, sometimes they'd be in the middle of the road. I'd have to stop and shush them away. And once in a while, just once in a while, I'd see a cow with a green or a yellow tag pinned in his ear. And once I asked the guy that was herding these things, what's it for? What's it mean? And I walked up to a cow and took a look at one. It was green. Now, at first, because I'm not a farmer myself, I assumed the tag designated the vaccinations and hormones the cow had been injected with, but I was wrong. But the guy told me it was a numbering system about birthing order for the calves. And when I asked him about vaccinations and growth hormones and all that, he said they do get vaxxed. And as for antibiotics, he said the cows only get those if they're actually sick. But he didn't even know what a growth hormone was. So I guess it's safe to say they don't pump them up with that stuff. Oh, and speaking of lag time, I understand up in the States all farmers are using RFID ear tags now so they can scan them and monitor them and GPS track them too. Well, you know, all that high tech costs big money. And all these cattle farms down here, well, they're stuck back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Farmers down here just don't have that kind of dough. Hell, when you drive out in the boonies, sometimes you even see a guy plowing a field with a mule. So they're still using techniques our grandfathers did. They raise them and fatten them the old-fashioned, low-tech way. Oh, and by the way, on that same little country road where I often see cows wandering around, there is a slaughterhouse, and attached to that slaughterhouse is a butcher shop. It's pretty clean and modern, too. And I've been in that place a couple times and bought some steaks. Not for me, but for someone who is putting together a barbecue. And I've seen truckloads of innocent cows being ushered in as well. But they're all the grass-fed type and minimally, and I mean minimally, injected. Now, of course, about 5 clicks away, 5 kilometers, that's about maybe 3 miles, there's a Walmart. And Walmart is the biggest employer in all of Latin America, so they're everywhere. You know any meat you buy there is going to be injected and processed, well, to the limit. Oh, and Costco, too, called Price Mart down here in Latin America. Every big city's got a couple. Though not so much in South America, but in Central America, yes. And virtually all their meat is imported from the States. They've even got Tyson chicken and all that chemically bloated stuff you're used to getting up there. However, I have seen in most regular grocery stores that have meat counters, and in Walmarts even, in the actual butcher section where you walk up and you ask for a particular cut of meat and they cut it off a hind quarter right in front of you, right there. Well, if you ask the butcher the origin of that hind quarter or a side of beef, they'll tell you almost all of that is sourced locally, and he'll tell you what farmer slaughterhouse it comes from. So there's an option. Just don't buy the prepackaged stuff that's imported from the States and elsewhere. Go to the meat counter and ask the butcher. Oh, and by the way, in Walmarts and some of the big chain grocery stores, they actually have a U.S. Prime imported meat counter or cooler. And though Latinos think that's the tits of the Ritz, you know, a cut above everything else, pun intended, because that section is loaded with stickers and signs saying U.S. Prime DA beef. Well, you can have it. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. But for Latinos, man, when they buy that stuff and serve it up at a party, talk about bragging rights, they usually let you know about it. Believe me, they have no idea what kind of chemical stew that is, and they don't care. As for me, if I ate meat, I'd eat the local stuff for sure. But I don't, because I'm an ovo-vegetarian, a word I kind of made up myself, for people who bother to ask. That means I eat eggs, fruits, vegetables, and seafood. Though if I'm at someone's house or a barbecue or whatever, I don't put up a fuss. I'll eat from the massive heapin' helpin' of vittles they always give their gringo guests. And if it's tough or totally gross looking, I'll hand it off to the dog when no one's looking. But you must be stealthy. You don't want to run foul of your host or hostess, you know. When a gringo doesn't eat everything on his plate, it's kind of an insult. Why? Because most Latinos off the gringo tourist trail have never had a real live gringo over to the house before. And what that means is when they pile the food on your plate and they'll keep doing that, you know, you better eat. But as for me, and I'm a picky eater, thank Allah for mutts underfoot. That's why dogs really love me. Now, as far as going down to one of the big, open, chaotic markets and buying meat there, well, there'll be butchers and sides of beef and hog's heads, the whole works, just hanging from hooks and ropes all over the place. And of course, they mostly don't have refrigeration, so it's sort of excessively gross looking at first for many gringos and expats who are used to the more or less whitewashed and sanitized butcher shops up north. Though do note, almost all the meat they're cutting comes from a local source. But personally, if I was a big meat eater, I'd rather go to an individual butcher shop where you can talk with the butcher and find out the source. They got them all over the place here, which means, of course, you have to speak Spanish or bring someone with you that does, because they're not going to speak English. So if you're looking for free-range beef or free-range driveway chickens, you got to get some boots on the ground. For example, when I arrive in a new city and my apartment or Airbnb has a kitchen, I plan a half day or so to check out where the fishing boats come in. Luckily, if you're in Central America, you're always within an hour or two of the ocean. So, what I do is I go down to the pier where all the fishermen come in, and I have a look around, talk to the fishmongers, and I'll get a couple of phone numbers from these guys. Or I should say I get their WhatsApp number, because that is the means of communication here. And I tell them I'll be calling ahead for some very fresh fish, 10 or 20 pounds of it, either pargo, robalo, corvina, the best fish to fillet. We'll set a price per pound right there, and then maybe a couple days later, I'll call up and say, let me know right away when you've got some off the boat, because I want it fresh, not frozen, and I want them to fillet it right in front of me. So I'll head back down there when they phone me up, maybe it's the next day or two. They'll pull that big fish out of their cooler and fillet it right there for me. It takes them maybe about half an hour to do that. And I've got my own little cooler along that's filled with ice, and then I take it home. Give it a good rinse, divide it into 10, 20, or 30 pieces, whatever, and throw those pieces individually wrapped in the freezer. Been doing that for years. But I never buy any fish at Walmart, Costco, or even one of the bigger supermarkets because I know a lot of that stuff is coming from China. The most common fish being tilapia, and that's garbage. Even salmon, yeah, they got salmon down here in all the big grocery stores. That's farmed fish too. That's just loaded with pesticides and hormones. And as for shrimp, I never eat or buy that stuff, unless I've hand-selected it myself at the fishmonger's. The thing is, it all looks good at the fishmonger. They'll have various mounds and colors of shrimp on ice. Some coming in directly from the boats, that's what you want, though more and more coming from those highly polluted shrimp farms, where they're brought up in nothing more than chemical swimming pools. Believe me, I've seen those things, and I've got a friend who owns a big company that produces that stuff, and they won't even eat it or feed it to their kids, but they export it everywhere. And restaurants are their biggest customers. So the truth is, I have to say, at least 90% of all the shrimp you see in restaurants worldwide is coming from those stagnant, polluted shrimp ponds. Yuck. But Americans and people worldwide have a love affair with shrimp. My advice, unless you live down here and can inspect those shrimp as they come off the boat, skip it. Oh, and speaking about very popular foods that are terribly bad for you, turns out, and you'll see this when you start living down here, Latin Americans are addicted to to that microwave plastic cup ramen noodle soup. And the two most famous brands you find in the grocery stores down here? Knorr, that's K-N-O-R-R, and Maggi, M-A-G-G-I. And when you walk into a supermarket, they've got whole rows full of that crap with every variety of artificial flavor under the sun. Talk about a double whammy. That stuff's just filled with chemicals. Look at the label. There are at least 15 chemical terms the average person can't even pronounce. Plus, they're absolutely loaded with MSG and salt. But man, those things just fly off the shelves because they're dirt cheap and all you need at work or on the job site is a microwave oven. And that double whammy, of course, is the chemicals and the fact that you heat it up in that styrofoam plastic cup. So you get way more than your recommended daily allowance of microplastics in your system, too. But people like what they like and you can't train them. In fact, just recently, I felt it might be worth it to have a nice long talk with a very bright Latina that I know who absolutely thrives on that stuff, too. She eats at least one cup of that crap a day, sometimes two. And I laid out the problems and sent her some links in Spanish, of course. And she was shocked and amazed and very concerned in the moment. And then a couple of weeks later, I ran into her at the grocery store. And sure enough, she had about 10 of those things in her shopping cart. So in the end, my words were completely wasted on her. So once again, convenience and cost will trump negative health benefits every time, especially with the lower and middle classes who almost always shop for price. The fact is, and I found this out the hard way, people don't want to know how it affects their health. Besides, telling a person, even a very smart person, that stuff might kill you is not a very good conversation starter. You won't make many friends that way. Now, one of the reasons why I personally get involved in conversations like that quite a bit, probably a lot more than the next guy, is because in general conversation, a lot of times age comes up. You know, how old are you and all that stuff. And when it's my turn to divulge that info, I say, guess. Guess how old I am. And when they miss it routinely by 10 or 20 years, they want to know how I do it. What's my secret? Well, what else do you say after that but to mention your diet, what you eat? So at first, they're very interested in that conversation. They want to know. But as I get into it and explain it more and more, I can see by the looks on their faces that they're losing interest. They just don't want to hear anymore. When they realize it involves a change of lifestyle, they just don't have the determination to do it. So they agree and they're all for it in principle, but they're not going to change. They say, yeah, I know. I have to start eating better too. But they almost never do. So in the end, I know I've wasted way too much time and too many words on trying to talk to people about nutrition. And it's even worse when you start talking about exercise. So we won't go there. Though it is something everyone promises to do, but not today. Maybe next week or next month or the new year. After my first heart attack, whatever. By the way, Johnny, can you do me a favor and pull into that McDonald's drive-up window? And it's really funny, you know, I've been to a McDonald's drive-up window many times. I never buy anything. I always have a little bag of mixed nuts in the car in case I get the munchies so I don't have the cravings for fast food. Thing is, many times the passengers in the back seat are sitting shotgun, eating McDonald's or other fast food. And out of courtesy, they offer me something. I turn them down. You don't like McDonald's? Aren't you hungry? They always ask, and I don't want to go into an anti-fast food spiel. Not when they're sitting right there undergoing death by 1,000 french fries. But, you know, really, most all of my friends know how I feel. And when I tell them I haven't had a fast food burger in over 30 years, they just can't wrap their head around it. In fact, I don't quite think they all believe it, but it's true. Though I have to say, in all that time, that 30 years, I probably have eaten one or two orders of fries. Because sometimes, just sometimes, when someone offers me something, I'll eat just one or maybe two fries, just to remind myself. Though, you know, in high school, I used to eat that crap all the time. It's when I went to engineering school and took a lot of biology and chemistry courses, that's when I saw the light and quit eating that stuff. Though I used to eat that stuff like crazy in high school, because I got it for free. Turned out, one of the guitar players in my band was the night manager at one of the McDonald's in Chicago, so anytime I came in, I got free food. Not to mention the fact that in my junior year in high school, in American history class, the guy that sat right behind me was kind of a dunce. Nice guy, but kind of thick. Then, first week of school, he said to me, Johnny, if you'd just take a little piece of paper and write down enough answers for the history test so that I at least get a C and pass, I'll give you free food at McDonald's forever. Well, that forever lasted a couple of years. He, too, was a night manager at another Chicagoland McDonald's. Now, I may have mentioned this story on a show before. The guy's name was Augie Dahl, D-A-H-L. When I got free gas and all the junk food I could carry, too, in my junior and senior year in high school, because turns out the guy sitting directly behind Augie Dahl, name was John Woods. He said, hey, Augie told me you're giving him the answers to the test. Listen, if you let Augie pass that paper back to me, too, He worked as the night manager of a 7-Eleven that pumped gas. He said, anytime you drive in, I'll fill up your tank and have your pick of junk food. So, hey, it's not like I was always pure of mind, body, and heart. I had my quota of McDonald's and junk food, but I saw the light and quit early. And when I hit about 30, I cut out the white rice and bread and most all dairy products. And then, of course, when I was around 30, I started exercising about an hour a day. And I'd only miss when I had company over, when I was on vacation or traveling. So now you know why people say I look 10 or 20 years younger than I am. In fact, I weigh exactly the same as I did when I graduated high school at 18 years old. Always between 160 to 165 pounds. All right, that's enough about me, way too much about me, but people want to know that stuff. They write me emails asking me about my diet, my lifestyle, my love life, my exercise routines, everything. It's nice to know, though, that many gringos and expats come down who have a healthy lifestyle, too, or are working on it. Though, again, tomorrow I could have an aneurysm or a stroke and it would be all over, but at least I'd be going out in top form for my age anyway. Oh, and remember, being down here in Latin America, if I did stroke out or get incapacitated in one way or another, I know that for $300 or $400 a month, I could have my own live-in nurse. And she'll cook, clean, and do the shopping, too. That's what they do here. And knowing that really cushions the blow of the inevitable sad consequences of old age. I mean, look, where would you rather be at 75 or 80 years old? In a smelly institutional nursing home where they've got one nurse or assistant for every 10 or 20 people? And think of it, it costs $50,000 a year or so to live out the rest of your days eating bland hospital food in death's waiting room. Or you could live out those last days in the comfort of your own home with your own personal nurse one-on-one attending to your every need for about $5,000 a year or so. I know, it just doesn't sound possible. But I assure you, lots of gringos and expats are doing it down here. All right, so then what else do we have with Paul's email? Oh yeah, he's asking about those courier services. Ordering from Amazon online and having the packages eventually delivered to your place, in his case, Guatemala. Well, I gotta tell you, with this COVIDiot crap, a lot of the courier outfits are getting way behind. And because the average moron is absolutely terrified of being infected with the plague of all plagues, the courier outfits are scared and overdosing on caution. In fact, when I go pick up my packages, even the last ones I picked up just 2 days ago, they only allow one person in their office at a time. So there's a line outside the door into the parking lot that never existed before. And they've got a chain set back about 6 feet from the receptionist, so you don't infect her with a lethal dose of COVIDiot. Even though you invade her space when you hand her your money or the credit card, apparently the virus looks the other way during that momentary exchange. So anyway, with the COVIDiot thing, the courier services are in flux. I'll be doing a little investigation in the next couple of weeks. I'll keep you posted. Funny thing is, those courier services can be great for a couple of years, and suddenly they change the rules or personnel or get bought out, and you just have to switch. I've switched 3 times, I'd say, in the past 10 years. All right, enough said about that. Now, I promised you some ugly, so here's some ugly. This from Mr. C. He said, Johnny, it was bound to happen. I take a walk every Sunday when they close down the big park in Guatemala City. But I wanted to do a video of a different section of the city for some social media stuff. So I ventured into Zone 10 and just passed El Establo, where lawyer Jose has taken me, and I've gone to since. Two guys then rolled up on a motorcycle as I was walking and filming, holding my iPhone out like a newbie. The passenger got off his bike, flashed his waistband, there appeared to be a gun, took my iPhone and headphones and drove off. The whole ordeal was over in less than 10 seconds. It was so quick, it didn't matter that I carry a Cryo 2 switchblade, nor did my size or jiu-jitsu skills training matter. I just didn't have time to do anything. And the old saying goes, don't bring a knife to a gunfight. As the week went on, I was pondering more and more heading back to the U.S., but I knew my emotions were running high from that incident. Not wise to make a decision like that under duress. Then he sent me a link to an article showing how more and more people in the States are living in their vans and in mobile homes. Yep, up in the States, things are deteriorating fast. But like Mr. C says, if they just moved to a lower cost of living country, they could have turned their fortunes around and maybe they wouldn't have to consider living the van life. There's even an Academy Award-winning movie out about people who live in vans and roam around the western states. Personally, I don't see how it ever won an award. It's too depressing. But almost all those people living in vans and mobile homes are getting Social Security. And with the average Social Security check being around $1,200 to $1,500 a month, that's poverty, cardboard box living in the States. But down here, hell, some months I live on less than $1,500 a month. And I live nice. Down here in Latin America, that's 3 or 4 times the average Latin American salary. But you knew that already. So, as far as Mr. C's sad tale about getting robbed by two guys on a motorcycle, I've mentioned a number of times on this show that two guys on a bike is the modus operandi for much of the thieving down here. It sort of feeds the revolving used cell phone business. In fact, I'm always on alert when I see two guys on a motorcycle weaving through traffic, especially when they're both wearing helmets or masks. The fact is, one guy on a motorcycle is almost never a problem. One guy on a bike's not dangerous, just annoying, as motorcycles will be. The fact is, I personally know of a lady who's been nicked 3 times in 2 years by, you guessed it, two guys on a motorcycle. Why? Because women are easy pickings and they almost never resist. Though, like you said, Mr. C, it's done with lightning speed. But the real reason bad guys on motorcycles tend to pick women is because they're always screwing around with their phones and not paying attention to their surroundings. They're always gabbing, tapping away at their phones, or posting things on social media. Ring a bell, Mr. C? And of course, they target tourists and newly arrived gringos who want to send back a million pics, videos, and selfies to impress the Facebook and Instagram friends back home. Problem is, newly arrived gringos and expats always wave their phones around a bit too much and let their guards down. But thankfully, we learn fast. It usually only takes one robbery and we learn, and it never happens again. Gringos learn that lesson fast, but Latinos almost never seem to. Last time I was robbed was 30 years ago, you know. Except, of course, for the times my cleaning lady and maintenance guy had sticky fingers. I still don't understand why people have $1,000 cell phones. My phone was $200 when it was new, and I bought it used. It's a Galaxy 3 that ran me about $70 a couple of years back, and no one wants to steal a 3-, 4-, or 5-year-old phone. By the way, if you think it's any safer up in the States, it's not. You know the guy who does that Shark Tank show? I never saw it, but the guy's name is Kevin O'Leary. I've seen him talking about Bitcoin. Well, he lives in the best part of Miami Beach, right on the beach. And he just got his $2,000 graphite bike stolen. And when he checked with the cops, he found out there were 100 bikes stolen that same night by an organized crime group, who also, just a couple of days earlier, stole 250 bikes, including a lot of high-end scooters like Italian Vespas. Yep, they'll steal 100 or more in one night, with regularity. Turns out they have a big panel truck, and they troll expensive areas of Miami Beach at night, scooping up every high-end bike and scooter they find. And they have a barge out on the water. They load that barge up and head down to South America or Europe, and they don't even have to change the serial numbers. They can sell them intact. There's no organized theft databases in South America, or for that matter in Europe, when it comes to scooters and bikes. Cars and motorcycles for sure, but not scooters and bikes. So bottom line, it's all about situational awareness and not flashing bling and high-end phones in public. Then again, most people, especially young people, are slaves to anti-social media and thus violate those safety and security rules over and over again. Though, oddly enough, when they do get robbed, it's their chance to get another 15 minutes of fame as they describe the event on TikTok.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.